Not here, not now. Attacking Garrosh, or this gray-skinned warrior, who was clearly appointed specifically to defend him, would only further aggravate the young warchief, and make him even more disinclined to listen to reason. At last, expelling air from his nostrils in a snort of contempt, Malkorok did as he was told. Garrosh moved forward, shoving his face up toward Baines.
"This is not a time for peace! The time for war has come. It is long overdue. Your own people have suffered from the expansion of the Alliance into your territory, unprovoked. If anyone should wish to destroy at the very least Northwatch hold, it should be the Tauren. You say that Jaina Proudmoore assisted you once. Are your loyalties now to her and the Alliance who have killed your people, or to the mighty Horde and me?"
Bane took a long, slow breath and let it out through his nostrils. He bent his head to within an inch of Garrosh's and said, for that orc's ears only,
"If I were ever to turn my back on the Horde and you, it would have been before this moment, Garrosh Hellscream. If you believe nothing else I say, believe that."
For a heartbeat, it seemed to Bane that an expression of shame crossed Garrosh's brown face. Then the scowl returned. Garrosh turned again to address the gathered crowd.
"This is the will of your war chief," he said bluntly. "This is the plan. First Northwatch hold, then Theramore. Then we drive the Night Elves before us and take for our own what was theirs. As for any Alliance protests," he said, sparing a brief glance for Sylvanas, "rest assured they will be dealt with swiftly. I am grateful for your obedience in these matters, but I expected nothing less from the Great Horde. Return now to your homes and prepare. You will hear from me again soon. For the Horde!"
The cheer, uttered so often and always with such passion, filled the hold. Bane joined in, but his heart was not in it. Not only was Garrosh's plan dangerously reckless, which surely should have been enough to condemn it, but it was based on treachery and hatred. The Earth Mother could never give her blessing to such an endeavor. Garrosh waved Gorehowl above his head one final time, letting the weapon sing as the wind whistled through the holes in its blade, then lowered it. The Black Rock Orc, Malkorok, Garrosh had named him, right behind Garrosh before even Eatrig, before even the Corcron. The orcs encircling the gathering snapped to attention and followed their leader out of the hold. The crowd began to disperse. Bane saw the blue-skinned, red-haired troll leader moving toward him and slowed his own steps.
"You baited him," said Vol'jin without preamble.
"I did. It was not wise."
"No, it wasn't. That's why I stay quiet. Got to think about my people."
"I understand."
The trolls were in more immediate peril from Garrosh's anger, living as close to Orgrimmar as they did. Bane did not blame Vol'jin. He glanced at the troll.
"But I know what your heart is telling you."
Vol'jin sighed, looking somber, and nodded.
"This a bad path we be walking down."
"Tell me, do you know who this Malkorok is?"
The troll scowled.
"He be a Blackrock. They say he still don't like the light of Durota after being so long in Blackrock Mountain serving Rend."
"Oh, I suspected as much," growled Bane.
"He denounced his crimes in service to Rend and asked for amnesty. Garrosh be giving it to him, along with any others who swear to serve him with their lives. Now the warchief got a nice big dog with sharp teeth to protect him."
"But how can he be trusted?"
Vol'jin laughed a little.
"Some might say how can the Grim Totem be trusted, yet you led the ones who swear loyalty stay at Thunder Bluff."
Bane thought of Tarakor, a black bull who'd served under Magatha. Tarakor had led the attack against Bane, but had pleaded for reprieve for himself and his family. Tarakor had proven to be as good as his word, as had all the others whom Bane had pardoned. And yet, somehow, to Bane, the Grim Totem seemed different from the Black Rocks.
Perhaps I am inclined to prejudge, said Bane. I think better of the Tauren than I do of orcs.
These days, Vol'jin said quietly, making sure he was not overheard. So do I.
Garrosh waited outside so that those who wished to take this opportunity to swear loyalty to him could do so more conveniently. A goblin female was kneeling before him, nattering on about something, when Malkorok said,
There he is.
Garrosh looked up and spotted Lorthamar.
Bring him.
He interrupted the goblin, patted her head, said,
I accept your oath,
and shooed her off as Malkorok approached with the Blood Elf leader. Lorthamar inclined his pale blonde head in a gesture of respect.
You wish to see me, Warchief? I do, said Garrosh,
steering them off a few steps so that they might speak with more privacy. Malkorok ensured they would not be disturbed by stepping in front of them and folding his massive gray arms.
Out of all the leaders, save Gallywix, who is supportive merely because he sees coins to be made, you are the only one who doesn't question your warchief. Not even when Sylvanas tries to play upon your sympathy. I respect that, elf. Know that your loyalty to me is duly noted. The Horde embraced and supported my people when no one else would, Lorthamar replied. I will not forget that. And so my loyalty and that of my people is to the Horde.
Unease stirred in Garrosh as he noticed a slight emphasis on Lorthamar's last word.
I am the Horde's war chief, Lorthamar, and as such I am the Horde.
You are its war chief, Lorthamar said, agreeing readily. Is that all you wish of me? My people are anxious to return home and prepare for the war that is to come.
Of course, Garrosh said. You may go.
Lorthamar had said nothing inflammatory, but the unease did not dissipate as Garrosh regarded the sea of red and gold move toward the gates of Orgrimmar.
That one is worth watching, he said to Malkorok. They're all worth watching, the Blackrock Orc replied.
Chapter 3
I recognize that dirty cloak, the image of Prince Anduin Rin said, grinning.
Lady Jaina Proudmoore returned the smile. She and her nephew, firmly related by affection, if not blood, were conversing by means of an enchanted mirror Jaina kept carefully hidden behind a bookcase. When the proper spell was recited, the reflection of each respective room would vanish, and what had been a simple mirror would become instead a window. It was a variation on the spell that allowed magi to transport themselves and others from one sight to another. Anduin had once shown up unexpectedly when Jaina was returning from one of her secret visits with then-Warchief Thrall. Clever lad that he was, the prince had figured out what she'd been up to, and now they shared a secret.
Never could fool you, Jaina said. How goes your time among the Draenei?
She could guess some of what he would tell her without waiting to hear the answer. Anduin had grown, not just physically. Even in the mirror, which rendered him in a palette of blues, she could see that his jaw was more determined and his eyes were calmer and wiser.
It's been truly amazing, Aunt Jaina, he said. There is so much going on in the world that I want to be part of right now, but I know I have to stay here. I'm learning something new almost every single day. It kills me that I can't help, but...
It is the destiny of others to buy us a future for you to grow up in, Anduin, Jaina said. It is your destiny to do precisely that, and do so well. Keep studying. Keep learning. You're right. You are exactly where you need to be. He shifted his weight from one foot to the other, and suddenly looked very young again.
I know, he said, sighing. I do know that. It's just hard sometimes.
There will come a time when you will long for these simpler, quieter days, Jaina said. Briefly, her mind went back to her own youth. loved by her father and brother, safe with her governess and tutors. Jaina had been filled with the joy of learning and the duties of a young lady, despite the military nature of her family. She chafed against such things then, but now they seemed sweet and delicate as a flower's petals. Anduin rolled his eyes in mock exasperation. "Give Thrall my best," he said. "I'm sure that's hardly prudent," Jaina replied, but she smiled as she said it. She lifted the cloak's hood over her golden hair. "Be well, Anduin. It's good to hear how you are doing."
"I will, Aunt Jaina. You be careful."
His image vanished. Jaina, who had been tying the hood down tight, paused in mid-motion. "You be careful." He was, indeed, growing up. As she had so many times before, she set out alone, taking care, as Anduin had asked, that she was not observed by anyone. She paddled the dinghy to the southwest, navigating the small islands of the area known as Tide Fury Cove. The occasional muckshell clacked at her in annoyance, but otherwise the waterways were undisturbed. Jaina pulled up to the meeting place, surprised to see that Thrall wasn't present. She felt slightly uneasy. So much had changed. He had given leadership of the Horde to Garrosh. The world had cracked open like an egg, never to be the same again. And a great evil that had burned with hate and madness had rampaged across Azeroth to, finally, be defeated. The wind shifted, caressing her face and blowing the hood off, despite the fact that she had tied it securely beneath her chin. Her cloak billowed back from her slender frame, and suddenly Jaina smiled. The wind was warm and smelled of apple blossoms, and before she quite realized what happened, it had lifted her out of the dinghy like a large, gentle hand. She did not struggle. She knew she was perfectly safe. Cradling her, the wind deposited her on the shore with the same care it had displayed when picking her up. Not a drop of muddy water had touched so much as the toe of her boot. He stepped out from his place of concealment behind a rock, and Jaina realized she still hadn't grown used to his new appearance. Instead of armor, Thrall, son of Durotan, wore simple robes. Red prayer beads encircled his throat. His large head, with black hair, was covered by a plain hood. The robes revealed part of his powerful green chest, and his arms were bare. He was indeed a shaman now, not a war chief. Only the Doomhammer, strapped to his back, was familiar to her. He held out his hands, and Jaina took them.
"Lady Proudmoore," he said, his blue eyes warm with welcome. "Long has it been since we met so."
"Long indeed, Thrall," she said in agreement. "Perhaps too long."
"I am Goel," he said, reminding her gently.
Slightly chagrined, she nodded.
"My apologies. Goel, it shall be."
She looked around. "Where is Eitrig?"
"He is with the war chief,"
Goel said.
"While I now am leader of the Earthen Ring, I serve humbly. I do not think of myself as greater than any other member."
A hint of an amused smile quirked her mouth.
"Many would consider you much more than a simple shaman," she said.
"I among them. Or are the tales that you allied with four dragon aspects to help bring down Deathwing just stories?"
"It was an honor, and a humbling one, to so serve," Goel said.
Coming from anyone else, the words would have been simple politeness. Jaina knew them to be true.
"I merely held the space for the Earth Warder. It was all of us, working together, dragons and brave representatives of every race of this world. The credit for slaying the great monster goes to many."
Her eyes searched his. "You are content with all your decisions, then?"
"I am," he said. "If I had not left to join the Earthen Ring, I would not have been prepared to undertake the task that was asked of me."
She thought of Anduin and his training, which was taking him far away from family and loved ones.
"There is so much going on in the world that I want to be part of right now, but I know I have to stay here. I'm learning something new almost every single day."
And she had told him he was exactly where he needed to be. Now, Goel was saying the same thing. part of her agreed with him. Surely the world was much better off without the ravages and terrorizing of Deathwing and the Twilight Cult. And yet... "Nothing is free, Goel," she said. "Your knowledge and skills were bought at a cost. The orc you left behind in your place had done much harm in your absence. If I have heard about what is going on in Orgrimmar and Ashenvale, surely you must have." His mien, which had been deeply peaceful, now looked troubled.
"I have heard, of course."
"And you do nothing?"
"I have another path," Goel said. "You've seen the results of that path. A threat that..."
"Goel, I hear this, but now that task is over. Garrosh is stirring up trouble between the Alliance and the Horde. Trouble that didn't exist until he started it. I can understand if you don't wish to undermine him publicly, but perhaps you and I can work together. Form a summit of sorts. Ask Bane to join us. I know he has no love for what Garrosh is striving for. I could speak with Varian. As of late, he seems to be more reachable. Everyone respects you, even in the Alliance, Goel. You have earned that respect because of your actions. Garrosh has earned nothing but mistrust and hatred because of his." She indicated her cloak, which Goel had blown about with the wind he had sent to bear her to shore. "You can control the winds as a shaman, but the winds of war are blowing, and if we do not stop Garrosh now, many innocents will pay the price for our hesitation."
"I know what Garrosh has done," Goel said. "But I also know what the Alliance has done. There are innocents, yes, but even you cannot place the blame for the current tension squarely at Garrosh's feet. Not all the attacks have been initiated by the Horde. It does not seem to me that the Alliance is working particularly hard to find peace, either."
His voice was still calm, but held a warning note. Jaina winced, not at the tone of voice, but at the truth of what was said. "I know," she said heavily. She dropped down despondently on a rock, jutting up from the soil. "There are times when I feel as if my words fall on deaf ears. The only one who seems to be truly interested in forging a lasting peace is Anduin Rin, and he's just 14.
"That is not too young to care about his world."
"But it is too young to do anything about it," Jaina said. "It seems as if I am struggling through mud, simply to be heard, let alone actually listened to. It's difficult to try to be a diplomat and work for real, solid results, when the other side won't acknowledge reason anymore. I feel like a crow cawing in the field. I wonder if it's just wasted breath." She was surprised at the frankness and weariness in the words. Where had they come from? Jaina realized that she truly had no one to talk to express doubts to anymore. Anduin looked up to her as a role model, so she couldn't explain how disheartened she felt at times. And Varian and the other Alliance leaders were, most of them, firmly on the opposite side of any argument she made. Only Thrall, Goel, seemed to understand, and even he appeared at the moment to be denying how much his decision to appoint Garrosh as War Chief of the Horde could cost. Jaina gazed down at her hands, the words pouring out of her, uncensored. "The world's changed so much, Goel. Everything's changed. Everyone's changed."
"Everyone and everything does change, Jaina," Goel said quietly. "It's the nature of things to grow, to become something they were not. The seed becomes the tree, the bud, the fruit, the..."
"I know that," Jaina snapped. "But you know what doesn't change? Hatred. Hatred and the hunger for power. People get an idea or a plan that works in their favor, and they dig in and won't let it go. They won't see what's right in front of them if it contradicts what they want. And the words of reason, of peace, just don't seem to be effective against that anymore." Goel raised an eyebrow.
"Perhaps you are right," he said noncommittally. "We must all choose our own paths. Maybe there is something else you should focus on."
She gave him a stunned look. "This world has already been torn apart. Do you truly think I should stop trying to prevent its inhabitants from tearing themselves apart?" Jaina stopped just short of adding, like you have done. It wasn't fair. Goel had hardly been idle. He had indeed been doing much for Azeroth, but still, it was petty of her. But she felt as if he had let her down. She folded her stained cloak about her frame in what she realized was a defensive gesture. Sighing, she deliberately loosened her tight shoulders. Goel sat quietly beside her on the boulder.
"You must do what you think is best, Jaina," he said.
A slight wind stirred the braids in his beard. He looked off into the distance as he spoke.
"I cannot tell you what that is, or else I would be just like these others whom you find so frustrating."
He was right. There had been a time when Jaina had easily discerned what the best thing to do was in a given situation, even if it was bitterly hard to do it. Choosing not to stand with her own father as he fought the Horde had been such a defining moment for her. So had been walking away from Arthas when he instigated what became known later as the Culling of Stratholm. But now, it's all so uncertain, Goel. More than it ever has been, I think. He nodded.
It is indeed.
She turned to look at him searchingly. He had changed in more ways than one. Not just his clothing, or his name, or his demeanor, but... "So," she said, "the last time we met, it was to celebrate a happy occasion. How is life with Agra treating you?" His blue eyes warmed.
"Well, indeed," he said. "She honors me by accepting me."
"I think you honor her," Jaina said. "Tell me about her. I didn't really have much of a chance to talk to her." Goel gave her a speculative glance, as though wondering why she wished to know, then shrugged slightly.
"She is, of course, a Mughar, born and raised in Draenor. That is why her skin is brown. She and her people were never tainted by any sort of exposure to demon blood. Azeroth is new to her, but she loves it passionately. She is a shaman, like me, and devotes herself entirely to healing this world. And,"
he added quietly,
"healing me."
"Did you need healing?" Jaina asked.
"We all do, whether we see it or not," Goel replied. "We bear the wounds of simply living in this life, even if we never have a physical scar. A mate who can see one for who one is, truly and completely. Oh, that is a gift, Jaina Proudmoore. A gift that restores and renews one daily, and which must be tended carefully. It is a gift that has made me whole, made me understand my purpose and place in the world."
Gently, he laid a large green hand on her shoulder.
"I would wish such a gift and such insights for you, my dear friend. I would see you happy, your life complete, your purpose clear."
"My life is complete, and I know my purpose." He smiled around his tusks.
"As I said, only you know what is right for you. But I will say this with certainty. Whatever journey you are on, whatever your path may lead to, I, at least, have found it to be sweeter by far with a life companion at my side."
Jaina thought with a trace of uncharacteristic bitterness of Caelthas Sunstrider and Arthas Menethil. Both had once been so bright and beautiful. Both had loved her. One she had respected and admired. The other she had loved deeply in return. Both had fallen to the call of dark powers and the weaker parts of their natures. She smiled without humor. "I do not think I'm very wise at choosing life companions," she said. She forced down the frustration and unhappiness and uncertainty and reached to place her small, pale hand on his. "I'm better when it comes to friends." They sat together for a long, long time. Chapter 4. It began to rain as Jaina paddled back to Theramore after her meeting with Thrall. Though it made her cold and uncomfortable for the moment, she welcomed the inconvenience, as few tended to venture out in such inclement weather. She tied up the little dinghy to the dock, slipping a little on the wet wood, and under cover of the steady downpour made her way to the magically concealed secret entrance to the tower, unnoticed. Shortly, she was in her cozy parlor. Shivering, Jaina lit the fire with a murmured incantation and a flick of a finger, dried her clothes the same way, and put away the cloak. She brewed some tea and selected a few cookies, set them down on a small table, and settled in by the fire, thinking about what Thrall had said. He seemed so content, calm. But how could he be? In a very real sense, he had turned his back on his people and, in handing the reins to Garrosh, had practically guaranteed that war would become inevitable. If only Anduin were older, he would be a valuable ally. But youth was so fleeting, Jaina felt guilty for momentarily wishing Anduin would miss a single day of it. And Thrall, go well. It would take her some time to get used to the new name. Was married now. What would this mean for the Horde? Might he want his son or daughter to rule after him? Would he take up the mantle of the Horde again, if this Agra gave him a child?
"Save any cookies for me, lady?"
The voice was female, youthful, a little squeaky. Jaina smiled without turning around. She'd been so engrossed in her thoughts, she hadn't heard the distinctive humming sound of a teleportation spell. "Kindy, you can always make your own." Her apprentice laughed cheerfully, hopping into a chair opposite Jaina beside the blazing fire and reaching for a cup of tea and one of the aforementioned cookies.
"But mine are only apprentice cookies. Yours are master cookies. They're ever so much better."
"You'll figure out chocolate bits any day now," Jaina said, keeping her face deadpan. "Though your apple bars are coming along quite nicely."
"I'm glad you think so," said Kindy Sparkshine.
She was perky, even for a gnome, with a shock of bright pink hair pulled back in pigtails that made her look much younger than her 22 years. Just a teenager by her people's reckoning of age. It would be easy to dismiss her as a chipper little thing with as much substance as the spun candy confection her hair resembled. But those who looked into her wide blue eyes would see a sharp intelligence there that contradicted the innocent face. Jaina had taken her on as an apprentice several months ago. She hadn't really had much of a choice. Ronan, who had led the Kirin tour through the Nexus War, and still guided them, had requested Jaina's presence shortly after the cataclysm had struck. He was more somber than she'd ever seen him as he met her in the purple parlor, a special place, accessible, as far as she knew, only by portal. After pouring them each a drink of sparkling Dalaran wine, he sat beside her and regarded her intently. "Ronan," Jaina had asked quietly, not even taking a sip of the delicious beverage. "What is it? What has happened?"
"Well, let's see," he replied. "Deathwing is loose. Darkshore has fallen into the sea."
"I mean with you." He smiled faintly at his own dark humor.
"Nothing is wrong with me, Jaina. Merely, well, I have a concern that I'd like to share with you."
She frowned, a small crease appearing between her brows, and put the glass down. "Me? Why me? I'm not one of the Council of Six. I'm not even a member of the Kirin Tor anymore." Once she had been, working closely with her master, Antonidas. But after the Third War, when the scattered members of the Kirin Tor had reformed, it hadn't felt the same to her.
"And this is precisely why it's you I must speak with," he said. "Jaina, we've all endured so much. We've been so busy, well, fighting and planning and doing battle, that we've fallen behind on another, perhaps even more important, duty."
Jaina gave him a bemused smile. "Defeating Malagus and recovering from a world shaken like a rat in a mastiff's mouth seem pretty important to me." He nodded.
"They are, but so is training the next generation."
"What's that got to do?" "Oh." She shook her golden head firmly.
Ronan, I'd like to help, but I can't come to Dalaran. I have my own challenges in Theramore, and even though Horde and Alliance have been equally harmed by the Cataclysm, we still have so much... He held up an interrupting hand.
You misunderstand me, he said. I'm not asking you to stay here in the Violet Citadel. There are enough of us here, but too few out there in the world.
Oh, she said again. You want me to take an apprentice?
We do, if you're amenable. There is one young woman in particular I'd like you to consider. She's extremely promising, intelligent, and fiercely curious about the world, outside her limited view of Ironforge and Dalaran. I think you'd be a very good match.
And then Jaina understood. She reclined in the comfortable purple cushions and reached for the wine. She took a small sip and said, And someone who'd do a fine job of reporting back to you, too, I presume.
Come now, Lady Proudmoore. You can't expect us to leave so powerful and influential a mage all alone out there in Theramore.
Honestly? I'm surprised you haven't sent along an observer before, she said. He gave her a rueful look.
There's so much in chaos now, he said. It's not that we don't trust you. It's that we simply need to... well...
I promise not to open any dark portals, Jaina said, lifting her hand and mockingly swearing. That made him laugh. Then he sobered. Placing a hand on hers, he leaned in for a moment.
You do understand, don't you?
I do, Jaina said. And she did. Before, there had been no time for anything other than simple survival. Any mage, anywhere, who had not actively allied with Malagos had been a threat to him. Now, with the world splintered, old alliances were splintered as well. And Jaina was both a powerful mage and a respected diplomat. Thoughts of Antonidas, who had, after much badgering on her part, taken her on as an apprentice what seemed like ages ago, filled her mind. He had been a wise and good man, with a strong sense of right and wrong, and the willingness to die to protect others. He had inspired and shaped her. Suddenly, Jaina very much wanted to give back to the world what it had given her. She was quite aware that she was a mage of no small ability, and now that the subject had been broached, she thought it might be a good thing to teach someone what she knew. She did not have to rejoin the Kirin Tor to help others understand and work well with magic, as she'd learned how to do. Life was unpredictable, these days more so than ever. Additionally, she found she missed Anduin's occasional presence. Perhaps a young person would liven up the damp old place. You know, she said, I recall a certain headstrong young woman who pestered Antonidas to take her as an apprentice.
And as I recall, she turned out rather well. Some say she's the finest mage in Azeroth.
Some say many things.
Please tell me you'll teach her, Ronan said,
dropping any hint of anything other than complete sincerity. I think it's a fine idea, she said firmly.
You'll like her, Ronan said.
His expression grew impish.
She'll challenge you.
Kindi had challenged Pained, too, Jaina remembered. She smothered a smile as she thought about Pained's reaction to the gnome girl. Pained was a night elf, a warrior who had stayed with Jaina ever since being assigned to the mage at the Battle of Mount Hyjal. She steadfastly served as Jaina's bodyguard, whether or not the lady actually needed her, unless Jaina sent her off on a more covert mission. Jaina often told Pained that she was free to return to her people at any point. Pained usually shrugged and said, Lady Tyrande never officially relieved me of my duty, and would not reply further. Jaina didn't quite understand the Night Elf's stubbornness and inexplicable devotion, but she was grateful for it. At one point, Kindi had been studying while Jaina methodically went through her cabinet of reagents, writing up new labels for those that were almost illegible, and putting aside items that had lost their potency for proper disposal. Chairs in Theramore were designed for humans, and Kindi's feet didn't reach the floor.
She had been swinging them absently, sipping tea as she perused a tome nearly as large as she was. Pained had been busying herself, cleaning her sword. Out of the corner of her eye, Chena had noticed the elf glancing at Kindi now and then, looking more annoyed each time. Finally, Pained burst out.
Kindi, do you enjoy being perky?
Kindi closed the book, marking her place with a small finger, and pondered the question. After a moment, she said,
"People don't take me seriously. This often denies me opportunities to be useful. I find it rather frustrating. So, no, I don't enjoy being perky."
Pained nodded.
"Ah, that is all right, then," she said,
and returned to her work. Jaina had to excuse herself quickly in order to keep from laughing. Unintentional perkiness aside, Kindi had indeed challenged Jaina. The gnome had more energy than anyone Jaina had ever met. The questions were endless. At first, they were amusing, then annoying, and then Jaina woke up one day and realized she was truly a mentor. A master with an apprentice who would grow up to do her proud. Ronan hadn't been exaggerating. He had probably given her the best the Kirin Tor had to offer. Kindi was curious about Jaina's role as a leader, as well as a mage. Jaina would have liked to have told the gnome about the secret meetings with Goel. Kindi seemed the type of person who might understand Jaina's reasoning, but of course could not. Fond of the girl though Jaina might be, Kindi was, in the end, honor-bound to report everything she knew to the Kirin Tor. Jaina's slip with Anduin had taught her to take extra precautions, and thus far she was certain that Kindi was still ignorant of the meetings.
"How is Master Ronan?" Jaina inquired.
"Oh, he is well. He sends his best," Kindi replied. "He seemed a bit distracted," she mused, pausing to take another bite of cookie.
"We're magi, Kindi," Jaina said wryly. "We're always distracted by something or other."
"This is true," she said cheerily, brushing at some crumbs. "But even so, my visit seemed rather rushed."
"Did you get to spend time with your parents?"
Kindi's father, Windle, was entrusted with the important duty of lighting all of Dalaran's streetlights with his wand in the evening. According to Kindi, he so enjoyed the task that he sold wands that enabled others to experience it themselves a time or two. Her mother, Jaxie, often provided baked goods for the high elf Amy to sell at her stall, and the gnome's red velvet cupcakes were extremely popular. This heritage was part of the reason that Kindi was so frustrated at her own, in her opinion, subpar pastries.
"I did!"
"And yet you still want cookies," Jaina teased.
Kindi shrugged.
"What can I say? Every tooth I have is a sweet tooth," she replied,
with the cheerful attitude that Jaina had come to expect, but it was clear something continued to worry the gnome. Jaina placed her plate down on the table. "Kindi, I know that you're supposed to report back to the Kirin Tor. That was part of the agreement. But you're also my apprentice. If you have any problems with me as your master..." The blue eyes widened.
"You? Oh, Lady Jaina, it's not you at all. It's just... I felt that something was off in Dalaran. You could sense it in the air. And Master Ronan's behavior didn't help put me at ease."
Jaina was impressed. Not all magi developed the sixth sense that told them, as Kindi had put it, that there was something off. Jaina herself had the ability, to a degree. She couldn't always tell when things were magically amiss, but when she did get that feeling, she paid attention to it. And Kindi was only 22. Jaina smiled a bit wistfully.
"Master Ronan was right about you," she said. "He said you were gifted."
Kindi blushed, just a little.
"Well, I'm sure if there is something truly amiss, we'll hear about it soon enough," Jaina said.
"In the meantime, did you finish the book I sent along with you?" Kindi sighed.
"An in-depth analysis of the temporal effects of conjuration of foodstuffs?"
"That would be the one, yes."
"I did. Although..."
She hesitated and wouldn't meet Jaina's eyes. "What's wrong?"
"Well, I think there's now a smudge of frosting on page 43.
Night fell in Orgrimmar. The heat dwindled, but did not dissipate. The hard-baked sand, devoid of vegetation, held the sun's heat, as did the large, newly constructed metal buildings. Orgrimmar, like all of Durotar, was hardly a pleasant place from a climate standpoint. It never had been, and now it was even less so. That suited Malkorok just fine. He found the heat of Durotar uncomfortable, as he had found the heat of the interior of Blackrock Mountain. And that was good. The best thing that had ever happened to the orc people was leaving the softness of places like Nagrand back in their home world of Draenor. This was a place that tested one's mettle, that tempered and tried one. It was not good to become too comfortable. And part of Malkorok's job was to see to it that no orc grew too comfortable. Some orcs at the recent gathering had been too comfortable, too secure in the rightness of their opinions. They'd openly voiced displeasure and disagreement with one who was not just their war chief, but the leader of their own kind. The leader of the orcs. The very arrogance of it caused Malkorok to grit his teeth in anger. He forced himself to stay silent as he moved quietly through the streets. He had told Garrosh that they were all worth watching. Garrosh had initially assumed Malkorok meant that all the leaders of the various races composing the Horde should be observed. The Blackrock Orc had a much, much larger view. When he said they were all worth watching, he meant the entire Horde. Every member of the Horde. And so it was that he'd had some of his best orcs follow a few of the malcontents who had dared to stay silent while others cheered. Of course, Eitrig, well-loved and respected, an advisor Garrosh had promised Thrall he would listen to, could speak with impunity. For the moment. But others who had sided with the old orc must pay the price of what Malkorok and Garrosh considered nothing less than open, unabashed treason. His mind went back to several years ago when he had served Rend Blackhand. He thought, with satisfaction, of what had happened to those adventurers, unwise enough to enter into the heart of the mountain and challenge Rend. But even more vividly, he recalled what he himself had done to his fellow orcs who had muttered against Blackhand, thinking themselves safe in the shadows. He had stalked them, carrying out his own implacable justice. Rend had commented once when one of the traders had gone missing. Malkorok had simply shrugged, and Rend had given him a sneering grin of approval. It was never mentioned after that. Things were different now, but not that much different. Now, Malkorok did not walk in the shadows alone. Four Corcran, appointed specifically by Garrosh to obey Malkorok's orders, as if they were his own, accompanied him, moving as stealthily as if they were shadows themselves. Corgis lived in the Cleft of Shadow, one of the more unsavory parts of Orgrimmar. One might assume that, with such a residence, Corgis was involved in shady business. However, the name of his shop, Dark Earth, was nothing more sinister than a description of the soil needed for his crop, mushrooms. While Corgis was, as far as Malkorok knew, a law-abiding citizen, the fact that he lived here made the Blackrock Orc's duty easier. With a wink and a few gold coins, would-be witnesses nodded and looked away. Corgis was kneeling, using a sharp knife to harvest mushrooms for sale on the morrow. He cut swiftly, close to the base of the fungus, tossed it in a sack, and moved on to the next. His back was to the door, which had a curtain partly drawn over the entrance and a sign that read, "Closed." Though he could not see his visitors, he sensed their presence and stiffened. Slowly he rose and turned around, his eyes narrowing at the sight of Malkorok and his companions standing at the entrance.
"Read the sign," he grunted. "The shop doesn't open until tomorrow."
Malkorok noticed with amusement that the mushroom farmer tightened his grip on his small blade, as if that would help.
"We're not here for mushrooms," Malkorok said, his voice soft.
He and the other four orcs moved into the shop. One of them closed the curtain.
We're here for you.
Chapter 5. Dawn's light, gentle but persistent, found its way through the cracks in the curtains of Jaina's bedchamber. Used to awakening at this hour, she blinked, smiled sleepily, and stretched. She swung her legs out over the bed, rose, threw on a robe, and pulled back the dark blue curtains. It was a gorgeous morning. Rose and gold and lavender, where the sun hadn't yet chased away the shadows of night. She opened the window and breathed deeply of the salty air, letting it tousle her bed-rumpled golden hair still further. The sea, always the sea. She was the daughter of the Lord Admiral, and her brother had once quipped that the Proudmoors all had seawater in their veins. A hint of melancholy touched her as she thought of her father and brother. She lingered for a moment longer, remembering, then turned from the window. Jaina brushed her hair, then sat down in front of a small table. With a thought, she lit a candle and gazed at the flickering flame. She started every day thus, if she could manage it. It helped her focus and prepare for whatever might be thrown her. Her blue eyes widened, and she became instantly alert. Something was about to happen. She recalled talking to Kindi last evening. The gnome was no doubt still asleep. She could have been born a night elf, she liked to stay up late so much. About her visit to Dalaran and subsequent unease.
"It's just, I felt that something was off in Dalaran," Kindi had said. "You could sense it in the air."
Jaina was sensing something now, like an old sailor who could feel a storm approaching in her bones. She felt a vague fluttering of apprehension in her chest. Her morning ritual would have to wait. Quickly, she bathed and dressed, and so it was that she was already downstairs and making tea when one of her most trusted advisers, Archmage Tervush, knocked on the door. Unlike Kindi, he didn't have anything officially to do with the Kirin Tor. He was, like Jaina, more comfortable on his own, and the two had developed a great and rewarding friendship, living in Theramore as a couple of mavericks.
"Lady Jaina," he said, "Well, there is someone here to see you."
He looked unhappy.
"He won't give me his name, but he bears a letter of safe passage from Ronan. I checked. It's genuine."
He handed her the rolled-up scroll, sealed with the familiar eye symbol of the Kirin Tor. Breaking the seal and reading, Jaina instantly recognized Ronan's handwriting.
"Dear Lady Jaina, I ask that you give this visitor whatever aid he requires. His cause is frighteningly real, and he needs all the assistance those of us who practice magic can offer him."
Jaina inhaled quickly. What was going on that Ronan would say something like this?
"Show him in," she said.
Looking as disturbed as Jaina felt, Tervush nodded and withdrew. While she waited, Jaina poured herself a cup of tea and sipped on it, pondering. A moment later, a man with a hood pulled low over his head strode into her parlor. He wore simple traveling clothes that yet bore no stain of traveling such a great distance. A blue cloak made from rich fabric swirled about him as he moved with a lithe quickness. He bowed and straightened.
"Lady Jaina," he said in a pleasant voice. "I apologize for coming so early and unheralded. It's not the way I would have wished to arrive."
With that, he pushed back the hood that had hidden his face and gave her an uneasy smile. He had the best of both human and elven features, blue-black hair that fell to his shoulders, and blue eyes bright with purpose. She recognized him at once. Her eyes grew wide, and her teacup crashed to the floor.
"Oh, that's my fault,"
Caligos, former aspect of the Blue Dragonflight, said. He waved a hand. The spilled tea disappeared, and the teacup reassembled itself, reappearing empty in Jaina's hand.
"Thank you," Jaina managed to say.
She gave him a slightly lopsided smile.
"You've also taken away the chance for me to welcome you in a proper manner. At least I can offer you some tea.
He returned her smile, but it didn't reach his eyes.
I would welcome some, thank you. And I regret that we don't have time for the formalities and pleasantries. It's nice to see you again, even under these circumstances.
Jaina poured tea for them both, with a hand that didn't tremble. She'd recovered almost at once. She had seen Caligos at the bonding ceremony of Goel and Agra, and had liked him immediately, although there had not been time for much conversation. She handed him a cup and said sincerely,
Lord Caligos of the Blue Dragonflight, I know well of your noble deeds and good heart. You are welcome in Theramore. The letter you presented instructs me to offer all aid I can, and that is what you shall have.
She sat down on the small couch and indicated that he join her. To her surprise, this being, so powerful and ancient, seemed almost shy as he accepted the tea.
It is an honor for me to work with you as well, lady, he said. You have a reputation also, one that I have long admired. Your understanding of magic and the solemnity with which you wield that power, as well as the more, shall we say, mundane powers of diplomacy and leadership, are to be respected.
Oh, Jaina said. Well, thank you. But pleasant as it is, I don't think you came all the way from Northrend to compliment and be complimented.
He sighed and took a sip of the tea.
Unfortunately, you are correct. Lady.
Jaina, please. I don't stand much on ceremony in my home.
Jaina.
He lifted blue eyes to her that no longer held any hint of lightness.
We're in trouble, all of us.
Your flight?
No, not just my people. Everyone in Azeroth.
My, that's a tall tale.
Kindi stood in the doorway, looking both confused and wary.
Or at least exaggerated. Surely not every single person in Azeroth will be affected by whatever trouble the Blue Dragonflight has gotten itself into now.
Her hair was a mess. Jaina suspected she'd put it up in pigtails quickly, without even running a brush through it. Calico seemed more amused than upset by the gnome's sharp tongue, and he turned to Jaina quizzically. Jaina recalled Kindi's statement to Paind that no one took her seriously. She felt sure that Caligos would learn to.
Caligos, may I present Kindi Sparkshine, my apprentice?
How'd you do? Said Kindi, helping herself to some tea. I heard you talking outside to Archmage Turvosh. I got curious.
A pleasure to meet you, Apprentice Sparkshine. I'm sure that anyone Jaina chooses to take under her wing is a worthy student.
Kindi sniffed and sipped tea.
You'll forgive me, sir, she said. Given all that's recently happened, I and the rest of the Dalaran Magi are a bit leery of your flight. I mean, you know, war and attempted slaughter of all other Magi? Things like that.
Jaina winced inwardly. A 22-year-old apprentice was all but accusing the former Blue Dragon aspect of, at the very least, bearing the responsibility for previous aspects' actions, and at the most, being deceitful himself.
Kindi, Caligos is a dragon of peace. He's not like Malagos. He...
Calic lifted a hand, politely interrupting her.
That's quite all right. No one knows better than I what my people have done to others who use arcane magic in this world. I've come to expect Kindi's attitude from anyone who... well, who isn't a blue dragon.
He gave the gnome a small smile.
A rather large part of my task as the flight's leader, if no longer its aspect, has been to try to show that not all of us approved of the Nexus War, and that since the death of Malagos, we've not attempted to control or manipulate others who use the arcane.
Isn't that the flight's job, though? Asked Kindi. Wasn't the aspect entrusted with that very duty? And don't you still kind of perform that role, even if your unique abilities are gone?
Calicos's eyes took on a faraway look. When he spoke, his voice was both softer and deeper, though it remained his own.
Magic must be regulated, managed, and controlled, but it must also be appreciated and valued, and not hoarded. Such is the contradiction you must deal with.
Jaina felt a shiver run along her spine. Even Kindi looked subdued. Calico's eyes once again became bright and alert, and he regarded both of them.
These were the words once spoken by Norgannon, the titan who gave Malagos the power of an aspect.
And so you make my point for me, Kindi said.
Understanding now that Calico's would not take umbrage, and thinking that it might be wise for her to hold her tongue and let the two of them hash it out, Jaina leaned back against the couch's cushion and simply observed.
All words are subject to interpretation, said Calico's. Malagos chose to understand that he was the ultimate minder of magic. Because he disapproved of how others were choosing to manage magic, he decided to recover it all for himself and his flight alone, that only they could appreciate and value it. I choose to regulate, manage, and control my own magic, to lead by example, to encourage others to appreciate and value it. Because, Kindi, if you truly appreciate and value something, then you wish to manage it well. You don't want to hoard it, you want to share it. And that was how I chose to be the minder of magic in this world. Now I am merely the flight's leader. I'm no longer an aspect. And in this new role, believe me, I more than welcome aid from the Kirin Tor and anyone else who is willing to help.
Kindi pondered this, one foot swinging as it dangled off the floor. The gnomish culture was nothing if not logical, and Kindi's methodical brain could appreciate what Kallik was saying. Finally, she nodded.
"Tell us about this thing that's going to affect everyone in Azeroth," she said.
Kindi wasn't going to apologize for her attitude, but she clearly had moved past mistrust of the Blue Dragon leader. Kallik, too, seemed to understand the shift and addressed both women in his response.
"You are familiar with the device known as the Focusing Iris, which has long been in the keeping of the Blue Dragonflight."
"That's what Malagos used to create the surge needles that diverted the magical ley lines of Azeroth, so they flowed to the Nexus," said Kindi.
Jaina was afraid she was starting to put two and two together, but even now, she still hoped she was wrong.
"Yes," he said, "it was, and it is this ancient orb that has been stolen from us."
Kindi looked as if she was going to be sick. Jaina stared at Calico's in horror. She couldn't imagine how he felt. She blurted out the first thing that came to her mind.
"Thank you for being willing to ask for help," she said, reaching out and pressing his hand impulsively.
He glanced at her hand, then her face, and nodded.
"I did not exaggerate when I said it affects all of us," he said. "I spoke with Ronan, then flew directly here. You, young lady," he said to Kindi, "are only the third non-dragon to know."
I'm flattered, stammered Kindi.
The resentment she seemed to bear toward Kallik had utterly disappeared. She said nothing more about tall tales. Calico's had been telling the truth.
"What do you know of the theft?"
asked Jaina, anxious to turn the discussion to practical matters. What was known, what was yet to be discovered, and, hopefully, what could be done about it. Briefly, Calico's filled them in. Jaina's heart sank with each word. Taken by unknown foes, who could overcome five dragons?
"Did Ronan offer any help?" she asked, surprised by how faint and hopeless her own voice sounded.
Kindi was turning the color of parchment and hadn't spoken in a while. Calico's shook his blue-black head.
"No, not yet, at any rate. I was able to sense the direction in which it was traveling. Faintly, but it was there. That's what led me to Kalimdor, and to you, Jaina."
He spread his hands in an imploring gesture.
"I am the leader of the Blue Dragons. We understand magic. We have our own tomes, more ancient than any you've seen. But what we do not have are your resources. I'm not arrogant enough to think that we know everything. There are magi not born dragons who came up with things no dragon ever knew of. That's where you can help me, if you would."
"Of course," said Jaina. "I'll bring in Archmage Turvosh and we'll all put our heads together."
"Breakfast first?" asked Kindi.
"Absolutely," Calico said. "Who can focus on an empty stomach?"
Slowly, Jaina's heart lifted, at least a little. Kallak could track the progress of a missing device. He was willing, apparently eager, to accept help. And he was right. Who could focus on an empty stomach? Their eyes met, and he smiled. Her heart lifted.